As a young man, Athanasius was present at the Council of Nicaea, at which the Nicene Creed was formulated, ending with the inexorable words,
"As for those who say, there was a time when he did not exist, before he was begotten, he did not exist. He was made from nothing, or from another substance or essence. The Son of God is a created being, changeable, capable of alteration." To such as these, the Catholic Church says, anathema.
Athanasius was born around the year 295, probably in Alexandria, at a time when the Egyptian church was divided by schism. While still a boy, he was taken into the household of Bishop Alexander, who had early recognized his talents. And when the Emperor Constantine called the Council of Nicaea in 325, Athanasius, now a deacon, accompanied the bishop as private secretary. He was not a member of the council, but we are told that he spoke there, probably unofficially. His passionate defence of the deity of Christ on that occasion won him the eternal enmity of the Arians, who saw in Athanasius their most formidable antagonist.
In 328, he succeeded Alexander as bishop. He was already popular with the people, who cried out during his election, "Give us Athanasius the Good, one of the ascetics." For 7 years, he occupied his see, devoting himself to the work of the diocese and visiting the monks in the desert. Athanasius was a monk himself at heart, and encouraged the monastic movement within the Egyptian desert. The first bishop to promote monasticism, he enabled the ascetic spirit to find a home in the Catholic Church and gave the first great thrust to monastic life. The monks rewarded him by supporting him in all his difficulties.
Athanasius wrote his first work, such as On the Incarnation of the Word, when he was still in his 20s. But although he was to go deeper and deeper in his thinking, he always retained a fear of approaching the great truths, as he wrote to the monks.
"I have hesitated to write on the highest and chief doctrines, lest what is imperfectly expressed through my inadequacy or the obscurity of language do hurt to the reader. For the more I desired to write and endeavored to force myself to understand the divinity of the word, so much the more did the knowledge thereof withdraw itself from me. And in proportion, as I thought that I apprehended it, so much I perceived myself to fail of doing so. Moreover, I was unable to express in writing even what I seemed to myself to understand. And what I wrote was unequal to the imperfect shadow of the truth which existed in my thoughts."
Now was beginning one of the stormiest eras in the whole history of the Church. The reaction against Nicaea had begun. Constantine tried to force unity by persecution, but Athanasius protested. When he refused to admit Arius to communion, a whole series of charges were brought against him, which he refuted in person to Constantine. But the opposition went on. Athanasius was deposed by a synod at Tyre. He decided on a bold step. He would appeal to the emperor in person.
He set off post-haste for the capital. When he arrived at the palace, he asked for an audience. But the Arians had bribed the palace guards and refused to let him in. Athanasius was not dismayed. He waited outside, and when the emperor came by, he stopped him in the middle of the road, requesting that those who had condemned him might be called to appear in front of Constantine, so that Athanasius could confound them in the emperor's presence. Constantine at first refused and ordered the removal of the bishop, but Athanasius insisted, till Constantine at last agreed to write to the bishops.
But the leaders of the synod immediately trumped up a new charge. They accused Athanasius of threatening to call a dock strike at Alexandria, stopping the vital corn supply to Constantinople if the emperor failed to support him, and of making his own profit out of imperial grants of corn to the poor. Constantine, furious, destituted Athanasius and sent him into exile. "The Lord will judge between you and me," the bishop responded calmly to his emperor before leaving for the desert. 2 years later, Constantine was dead.
Athanasius spent the greater part of his long life, and he lived to be nearly 80, battling against Arianism. But it was not until 5 years after his death that the heresy finally collapsed. Athanasius had recognized the danger to the church from the start. And as Carlyle wrote, "If Arianism had triumphed, Christianity today would be but a legend.
This heresy has come forth upon the earth like some wild monster, which not only injures the innocent with its words, as with teeth, but has also hired external power to assist it. The truth is not preached with swords or darts, nor by means of soldiers, but by persuasion and counsel. But what persuasion is there when fear of the emperor prevails? Or what counsel is there when he who withstands them receives at last banishment and death?
After Constantine's death, Athanasius returned to his see, but his enemies forced him to flee once more, this time to Rome, where Pope Julius held a council of Western bishops which acquitted Athanasius. But though the Pope remonstrated with the Eastern bishops, the deposition of Athanasius was confirmed, and an Arian bishop named Gregory appointed in his place. Athanasius wrote an encyclical to all bishops everywhere.
And now this wonderful Gregory accuses before the governor those who pray in their own homes, and he takes every opportunity to insult their ministers. His conduct is of such violence, then, that many run the risk of not being baptized, and many have no one to visit them in sickness and distress, a circumstance which they regret even more bitterly than their illness. For while the ministers of the church are under persecution, the people condemn the impiety of the Arian heretics and choose rather to be sick and to run the risk than to permit a hand of the Arians to come upon their head.
Athanasius was a tough fighter, and he was soon back in his see. But the emperor Constantius, Arian son of Constantine, was determined to be rid of him and made yet another attempt to influence the Orthodox bishops against him. He summoned them and ordered them to subscribe against Athanasius and to hold communion with the heretics on pain of banishment. Athanasius himself describes their reaction.
When the bishops heard this, they were utterly amazed, and stretching forth their hands to God, they used great boldness of speech against him, teaching him that the kingdom was not his but God's, who had given it to him, whom also they bade him fear, lest he should suddenly take it away from him. And they threatened him with the day of judgment, and warned him against infringing ecclesiastical order and mingling Roman sovereignty with the constitution of the church, not to introduce the Arian heresy into the church of God.
Constantius condemned the bishops. Athanasius himself, after a night of vigil in his cathedral filled with worshippers, sent the people home and finally allowed his ministers to drag him out in the midst of the emperor's soldiers to yet another exile. He wrote an explanation for this flight, that to every man a time is allotted, and our Lord himself had set an example.
He neither suffered himself to be taken before the time came, nor did he hide himself when it was come. The persecutors sought after the saints that there might be no one to teach, as the Jews charged the apostles. But for this cause they endured all things that the gospel might be preached. They passed not the time of their flight unprofitably, nor, while they were persecuted, did they forget the welfare of others. When, while they fled, they preached the gospel, and gave warning of the wickedness of those who conspired against them, and confirmed the faithful by their exhortations.
After being restored and yet again deposed, Athanasius was recalled by the Emperor Julian after 6 years of exile. But Julian saw in Athanasius the foremost representative of the religion that he hated, and 8 months later, despite the protests of the people, he forced the bishop once again out to the desert.
It was Julian the Apostate who described Athanasius as this troublesome bit of a man. And Athanasius, small and energetic, managed to give trouble to quite a few people in his time. During his 40 years as bishop, he was 5 times driven into exile by heretics and politicians. But his enemies failed to shake his profound faith, and he never ceded 1 inch in his defense of orthodoxy. Athanasius against the world became a battle cry for many a kindred spirit in the centuries that followed.
The name of Athanasius is usually linked to the Athanasian Creed, a document of 40 rhythmic Latin clauses used as a confession of faith. But although numerous scholars attributed it to Athanasius, it has more recently been admitted to be much later in date. Athanasius of Egypt, called the Father of Orthodoxy, is recognized as one of the great Greek doctors of the Universal Church. Shrewd in argument and a brilliant biblical scholar, he was certainly one of the greatest characters in early church history. He's described by scholars as being in the first rank of the great religious reformers because he recalled Christianity from the barren paths of speculation to a new sense of the reality of the gospel. He was the first of the great protagonists of spiritual liberty against the encroachments of the state.
His aim in life was the greatest welfare of the church. His supreme achievement was that by his unflinching constancy to the truth, combined with his willingness to tolerate a variety of expression, by his personal holiness and devotion, he saved Christianity from compromising its assertion of the two fundamental truths of the unity of God and the divinity of Christ. His great strength is that he was never the mere theologian. His interest is in the religion of the plain man, for he envisaged a wide and sometimes illiterate audience.
Athanasius, we're told, was at heart a monk, and nowhere is his love for the monastic life more evident than in his Life of Antony, described as a eulogy of the entire Egyptian anchoritic movement and a plea for a return to the primitive ideals of the gospel. He wrote this introduction in his Life of Antony for the monks of the West.
I have acceded to your request with great promptness and willingness, for there is a great advantage for me merely to recall the memory of Antony. And I feel that when you have heard the story, you will be able to admire the man and to emulate his resolve. His is an ideal example for monks in the pursuit of asceticism.
And this is how Athanasius tells the end of Antony's story.
He had known about his passing from God, and he spoke to his brothers as follows. This is my last visit to you. I should be surprised if we saw each other again in this life, for it is now the time for me to die. So bury my body and hide it below the earth, and abide by my word, so that no one will know where my body is or where it has been laid, except you alone. For I shall receive it back incorrupt from the Saviour in the resurrection of the dead. But divide my garments, and give to Bishop Athanasius the one sheepskin and blanket on which I used to sleep. It was he who gave it to me, and I have worn it by my use. Give the other sheepskin to Bishop Serapion. You may keep the hair shirt. And so, goodbye now, my children, for Antony is on his way and will be no longer with you. He finished, and they kissed him, and he drew up his feet. Then, as though he were gazing on friends who had come to see him, and joyful because of them, with a smile on his face, he passed away and was gathered to his fathers. And afterwards, following the orders he had given them, they wrapped his body and buried it in the earth, and no one knows where it is hidden except they alone.